Cross-Section USA with Dwight Cook. CBS and its affiliated stations present another cross-country visit with our neighbors as a group of the USA's largest national organizations join CBS for these weekly reports. And every Saturday at the same time, spokesmen for millions of our neighbors in farming, labor, and business bring us their recommendations for action on the urgent issues which will shape our jobs and our future security. Cross-Section USA with Dwight Cook.
Good afternoon. I'm here in Chicago today after a vacation which was chiefly characterized by its briefness. I'm still mixed up. It's hard to get back in the swing after vacationing. While I'm away, I hope you enjoy Bill Shadell of CBS's Washington staff, who did such a nice and such a very impartial job in my absence. Today, I've invited representatives of organizations in which a good many millions of our neighbors are joined, asked these men and women to sit around these mics with me for just one purpose, to help you. To help you avoid quite a little financial cost and quite a lot of heartbreak and perhaps death somewhere close to you. Because in the time we've been on the air this afternoon, some 4 people have been killed and 20 people have been injured, not by deadly or mysterious diseases, not by old age, but by completely avoidable and unnecessary accidents. And I have experts in the fields of home and factory, highway and farms, sitting here with me today to try to tell you how you can avoid having yourself or one of your loved ones, maybe, being one of those 4 killed or 20 injured in the next minute. That sounds like quite a few people, Mr. Forney. Mr. Forney here is the General Secretary of the National Safety Council, so he's interested in the overall field. How many people does that add up to a year?
Well, in a year, Mr. Cook, there are about 100,000 accidental deaths in the United States and about 10 million non-fatal injuries.
In other words, 10 million people get hurt if they don't get killed every year.
Exactly so.
In other words, considerably more people than were killed and hurt in that very famous and bloody Battle of the Bulge during the war.
A great many more, Mr. Cook.
Why do you suppose we don't know more about that, Mr. Forney?
Well, we don't know more about it because the problem hasn't been sufficiently studied, and because not enough people have been reached to cause them to do something about it. Now, I think that one of our purposes here today is to get a message across to the people of this country so that they can do something more about a toll of that size.
And what we're trying to do from our side of these mics today is to try to tell you on the other side of them very specific ways you can avoid being killed. I hope none of us are going to lecture at you. I hope none of us are going to spout any broad generalities. We're here to try to talk business with you, the business of keeping yourself alive and in one piece. Who's our first guest in that, Mr. Forney?
Well, of these 100,000 deaths, Mr. Cook, about 33,000 of them occur in the home. And we have a person here today who can tell us something about that field of safety. She is Mrs. George W. Jakewa, safety chairman of the General Federation of Women's Clubs.
Which I might add for Mrs. Jakewa is the largest organization of women in the United States, is it not?
That's quite right.
All right, Mrs. Jakewa, start going.
Well, of course, you know there is no place like home for accidents. Because 11 accidents occur at home for every 4 accidents in motor vehicle traffic.
Sounds like a pretty unsafe place to be. Maybe we better all leave home?
Well, not leave home, but perhaps correct the hazards in your home and turn it into a happy home, not a hazard home.
Well, I saw in the morning paper here in Chicago, I don't know whether it was typical or not, but a home accident. It showed a picture of a woman being chipped out of a brick flue. She had some way or other, which was not explained in the newspaper, had managed to fall 5 stories down a brick chimney and stick there. And at last report, they were chipping her out brick by brick, I think in one piece, though. Is that typical?
I hope in one piece, and not in the small segments of the bricks. How she got there, I have no idea. But that is an example of the greatest, of the cause taking the greatest number of deaths.
Falling down chimneys?
Falls of all categories. Now, if you're actually wanting details, I can give them, but I don't think this is the time to break that down. However, falls have caused the greatest number of deaths in home accidents, and burns and scalds come next.
They all sound very simple and very easily avoidable. Just don't fall down stairs or chimneys?
Well, they really are avoidable. That's the unhappy part about it.
Mrs. Jakewa, Perhaps the reason we have so many accidents at home is because homes aren't built safely. In other words, do we charge all of this up to the contractors and the builders of homes? Is that why we have home accidents?
Well, the strange part of it is part of it can be attributed to poor architecture. That is, architecture not considering the safety hazards. This is a comparatively new emphasis in our home building, been neglected.
But since most of us have to live in the homes we've got, not the homes which can be designed to be more safe for us, what do we do in what we've got?
We sit ourselves down and look around at our surroundings, our equipment, the things we live with and among. And we put into a pigeonhole the sentimental affection which we may have for various objects and look at it from an engineering, a safety engineering point of view. The woman is the home safety engineer.
Mr. Forney's nodding with you there, but I'm not. I don't follow you. I have a very sentimental attachment to a China bunny on the fireplace mantle. How does that make the home unsafe, and how do I re-engineer the bunny?
Perhaps your bunny has nothing to do with it, but if you do have a lamp with nice red roses on it over in one corner, which you have a cord, but the outlet is on the other side of the room, unless that cord is very carefully tacked around the, or fastened around the wall so that it is out from under feet, that is a definite hazard.
You mean you might fall down and sprain a wrist that way?
Well, one of the most tragic deaths that I have come across in recent times was of a housewife just about a month ago, rushing to answer an insistent telephone call. And may I point out now that I don't think any telephone call is worth this amount of hurry. In so doing, she ran across the room, stubbed her toe on one of these wires for a floor lamp, fell. In falling, her arms flew out, and one hand touched the plug out of which the light cord had been pulled. Unfortunately, they had her funeral 2 days later.
Mrs. Jake, I've heard it said that women, and we hope some women are listening to us today, are too prone to be interested in safety matters away from their homes and not enough interested in home safety. What do you think about that?
In other words, the woman isn't minding her own business?
No, but the grass is always greener in the other yard. That's one reason. I think most of us always like to look in on behind the scenes that are marked restricted or reserved. But the other thing is that of recent years, women, particularly in clubs, have been emerging from the limits of the four walls and out into civic affairs. They can't help but being concerned because safety begins at home, but it doesn't end there.
And we have to go on from the home to the rest, or we'll end with safety in the home.
Mr. Cook, it is a fact that safety has been given more attention in industry for a long period of time than it has in any other of these fields. Perhaps we can learn something, I'm sure we can, from the history of industrial safety. We happen to have with us today a man who knows a lot about industrial safety, Mr. J.E. Trainer, who is vice president of the Firestone Rubber Company. And I think I can say that he probably knows more than the average person about this business of industrial safety because of the fact that his company, for the past several years, has received the top award for safety from the National Safety Council, which I have the honor to represent. Mr. Trainer, I guess you're next on program here.
Speaking not only for your own company, but also as the official representative of the National Association of Manufacturers for some of their resolved ways of procedure in this field. Right, Mr. Trainer?
Well, Mr. Forney and Mr. Cook, I think must speak for myself and our company because we're very proud of the record that we've just attained, where our accident frequency rate is 74% below the average of the industry.
That's quite an average, but how many people get killed during a year?
Well, there were 16,500 people killed last year in industrial accidents, and there were 2 million people who suffered accidents of one kind or another.
How did they get
killed? Incidentally, that cost about $2 billion. That's the total cost of those accidents and deaths.
Beside the misery concerned.
Yes, sir.
What's the chief cause of accidents? Machines that chop off your fingers and toes?
No, it's the lack and the carelessness on the part of the individual. In other words, the individual plays the biggest part in any safety program. The problem of safety, if it just depended upon guarding machinery and putting mechanical devices on them to make them safe, would be relatively simple. But it's a question of how those machines are operated. Industrial machines are no safer than the finest automobile that was ever made.
Well,
and that's only as safe as the driver.
Mr. Traynor, may I just ask, do you mean to imply by that safe conditions and safe machines and protective equipment are unimportant in industrial safety? What's your comment on that?
No, sir. Well, I'm assuming here that all the mechanical devices that can be applied to cause the machines to operate safely have been taken care of. I deal now with the question of how the individual operates those machines.
Is that the way the thinking was done in your plants on the way to getting this kind of a safety award?
A great deal of stress was laid on the training of the individual. When a new man came on a job, the first thing that he was taken to the machine by his foreman or supervisor and showed the right way to operate that machine as against the wrong way to operate it, operating it in a way that would leave him free of accident. For example, in our big rubber mills, there's the right and the wrong way to operate that mill. If that mill is operated from the right position in the front of the mill, and by chance the man is caught in the mill, there is ample time to stop that mill, which is driven by a 300-horsepower motor. But if he happens to be operating up on top of the mill, he will be caught into the nip of the roll before the safety devices can work. That's what I mean between the right and the wrong way to operate.
How do you make sure he does it the right way, then? Can you?
By training him, working with him, and never giving up.
Mr. Cook, Mr. Traynor represents a large manufacturing industry here, and manufacturing does have its accident problems. However, I'd like to quote one figure which will serve to introduce another man that we have around the table here. That figure is this, that in the United States every year, there are more fatal accidents at work in agriculture than in any other occupation. So I think it's very appropriate that we have with us a representative from that field, who is Mr. Kirk of the Illinois State Grange.
Why do you think, Mr. Kirk, more farmers get killed than anybody else?
Well, Mr. Cook, I think that there is a reason for that. Now, Mr. Traynor has just told us how that their men are trained in the factory. Let's take a look for just a little bit at the farmer as he goes about his business. He does not operate just one machine alone. He operates a number of machines, the various farm operations that must be done at the present time.
You're speaking as an expert there, are you not, Mr. Kirk? You're not only the master of the Illinois Grange, you're also a farmer in your own right.
I am a farmer, that's right. I have operated tractors almost since tractors were manufactured.
Is that a dangerous occupation?
We take the figures for that. I've never been injured by a tractor, if I can make that statement here. But we do know that machinery is the cause of the most accidents on the farm.
Is that passing the buck back to Mr. Train and the manufacturers? They ought to make machinery a little safer for farmers?
Let's put it this way. Manufacturers have taken a great deal of pains to put out machinery that is safe to operate. I expect that I know just about what Mr. Traynor is going to say before I finish here.
No fair. Let him speak for himself, Mr. Kirk.
But let's take it this way. That farm is not under supervision. He feels like that machinery is his. Perhaps he doesn't accept the responsibility that's his. If the manufacturer did not turn out a tractor with power, a tractor that was durable and that had speed to meet the various operations, a farmer would have no use for it. But the manufacturer cannot stay out there and see that every bolt is replaced in that tractor when it is in operation.
Mr. Kirk, I think it's a fact that the farmers today are using about as much power per man as we're using in the industrial manufacturing world.
Without the benefit of all the instruction which you're able to give?
That's quite a point. In our factories, we have supervisors looking after the men that are operating the equipment. On the farm, that farmer's out there by himself.
By the way,
And you have the same problem there that we have in our factories. Some of our people are prone to take safety devices off the equipment. They think that they can operate them perhaps more efficiently without the safety devices. I think that same thing is true on the farms. Matter of fact, I think the farmer's well known that he does remove the various gadgets and safety devices from his equipment.
Before I let Mr. Kirk come back in, there was one question I'd wanted to ask you earlier, Mr. Traynor. In terms of what you said about management's responsibilities in training workers, are you saying that it's altogether up to management and that labor unions have no responsibility?
No, the man who plays the biggest part in any safety program is the worker himself.
Which brings it right back to the farmer himself, Miss Kirk, much more neatly than I could have done.
Well, that brings it right back to the individual every time and their personal responsibility to do the thing the right way and the safe way.
What kind of accidents occur on farms? Kirk, do you think of any specific example for us who are not on farms?
Yes, Mr. Cook, of course they are varied. Every day brings different ones, perhaps. Let's take, for example, the man who was in a hurry. Farmers are in a hurry in the planting season. That's the only time they have to get the job done. Take the man who knew that the bolt was gone from the tractor seat and failed to replace it. That was no fault of the manufacturer. Let's take, for example, the man who failed to put the shield.
Wait a minute. We've got the bolt out of the tractor. What happened next is very clear to you, but I just have a tractor minus one little bolt.
You're right, Mr. Cook. Can you imagine a man going down, past the side of a tractor and under the wheel? No one saw him do it, but the story was there. You could read it without seeing it done.
Maybe you could, but I can't. You lost me. It's like, for want of a nail, a horseshoe was lost, and therefore England is one kingdom instead
That's
of six.
That's right.
And I don't get the connection here now between the bolt and being under the tractor.
The bolt coming loose in the seat allowed the seat to come off. The man evidently crossed a small raise in the ground, and he rolled right off under the tractor wheel. You understand, Mr. Cook, that no one saw him do it. All we know is that the bolt was out of the seat and that the tractor wheel had passed over the man's body.
And the man was out of this world for good.
He was out of this world for good. Let's take the man who backed up against a whirling shaft which drives our combines and our corn pickers. That shaft has power there. There was a guard that should have been over it, but the guard had been left off. That man was very, very fortunate. He did get off with his life, but his clothing wound up. It was fortunate that the clothing were not stouter than what they were, but he was very fortunate to get away, even though he lost his clothing.
He ended up taking a sunbath he didn't expect.
That's right.
Mr. Cook, what Mr. Kirk has said leads me to ask this question. First of all, he said that the farmer doesn't have supervision, and at the same time, the farmer has more of a problem in one respect, or some respects, than the factory worker. Well, how do we make up? How do you make up? How do farmers make up for the fact that you don't have this supervision? What can be done?
We must bring to the individual the responsibility. Of course, through our national farm papers and through our state farm papers, we constantly emphasize that fact. We try to bring this point out, too, that even though a farmer is independent on his own farm and feels like that I'll operate this machinery as I please, after all, other people are involved, and that the effects of a serious accident may be far-reaching, especially in these times when manpower and production are very short.
I remember. Go ahead, Miss.
I want to interject the province of the women in this farm business, because after all, there is this great field of improvement of farm homes. And I would like to ask Mr. Kirk how interested they are in utilizing the services of home economists to train, to educate and inform the farm woman in the improvement and correction of hazards within her home.
Mrs. Jackwell, I would say that probably the homemakers are more interested in that line than the men themselves are.
In other words, Mr. Kirk is saying maybe Mrs. Kirk should answer this for myself.
Yes, but the men, after all, come in, you know, for their meals, and they don't want to find their spouse under the table with a broken arm or out with a scalded face or have the potato blow up in her face because she didn't know enough to prick it before it was baked.
More unpleasant things casually, Mr.
Well, they all happen in the homes, and so many of them in the kitchen. It's so true, and unhappily so.
Before we leave agriculture, there's one little anecdote. You'd call it an anecdote if it weren't unhappy, which I remember reading a couple of months ago. Another farmer in a hurry, Mr. Kirk, who was in his barn, he was used to sliding down a rope to reach the ground after he's fixed his hay up in his loft, and he slid down one day in his regular hurry, but he forgot he had some matches in his pocket. They set his coat on fire, which set the straw on fire, which burned up the barn. P.S. the farmer again escaped, but not in the same clothed position. But all this hurry, and in a hurry, brings us to the second greatest hazard. If you can keep out of being killed in the home, the one place where we'll really get you is when you get out of the home and on the highway. Is that not so, Mr. Forney?
Yes, indeed. I suspect that our listeners are wondering if we don't know anything about the highway accident problem. Well, I think we do, and we have someone here who has been very close to that problem and is doing something about it. Mr. R.R. Barlow of the Illinois Press Association.
What's a press association got to do with highway accidents, Mr. Barlow?
Well, Mr. Cook, press associations all over the country are engaged now, and they have been for several years, ever since the war, in campaigns for traffic safety, traffic education.
Trying to get across to us all the ways not to get ourselves killed on the road.
That's right.
How many people roughly do get killed or hurt on the road, if it's the second most dangerous way of...
Well, last year, 32,000 persons were killed in traffic accidents.
You say that so calmly and almost casually. 32,000 is a lot of people. How many got hurt?
1,365,000, I believe.
Almost a
million? Which 115,000 were permanently maimed.
And all of this avoidable, Mr. Forney?
All of it avoidable, unless someone would argue that there are 2% that are acts of God. We don't admit more than that.
How much is that out of 1.5 million, not having my...
I haven't got my slat rule here, Mr. Cook.
Well, it's very few anyway.
Very few.
Any of us will pause to work it out. Let's take this traffic problem in reverse, Mr. Barlow. We've been saying these are ways you can stay safe. These are things you must do in a factory or on a farm to stay safe. Let's take it in reverse this time. Let's discuss the quickest and easiest ways to commit suicide in cars or on the highway. As a driver, first of all, what's the easiest way to get ourselves killed?
Easiest way is to get in your car and get out on the highway and just drive too fast.
Just push the car a little extra 5 miles.
Ask me how fast is too fast.
Yeah, how fast is too fast, huh?
It all depends on conditions. It may be that 20 miles an hour is too fast.
And that
certain circumstances.
In other words, the driver's got to use a little of the common sense he proves when he takes his driving examinations to drive the way he doesn't intend to drive after he gets the license.
Speeding is the greatest cause of death on the highway.
I'm just impressed by that because I was taking a driver's license in California again a couple of weeks ago, and they have a very exhaustive test, and you learn how to do, not to do, and the reasons why you shouldn't do any of the things which I would say 90% of the driver did happily day after day. But be that as it may, suppose my car won't go fast enough to kill me that way. What do I do next?
Well, about the next thing you do is get out there and try to be a road hog. Push yourself through against stop signs and against the other fellow.
In other words, just think I need a little more of the road than anybody else, and I'll end up with
You're sure to be hit, that's right.
And if I'm not really ambitious and if I'm not an extrovert and can't push myself around on the road, what do I do next to get killed?
Well, just get out there and just be a little careless. Don't pay attention to what you're doing.
That's easier. That's a little easier to do than either of the first two. Well, now,
like more people do that than even speed. They don't keep their mind on their work.
I've been assuming so far the way to get killed on the highway was to drive a car. Isn't that a little false, Mr. Barney?
How about the mechanical conditions of the cars?
Getting close to tires and parts of
the
car?
That's one of the major causes of deaths and accidents on the highway.
P.S., if you're too lazy to avoid minding your own business, just be sure you don't check up on the condition of your car.
The trouble is, as long as your car runs, you think you're safe.
Run on the theory that it can't happen to me.
Answering your question, Mr. Cook, it certainly is a fact you don't have to drive a car to get killed or injured in a highway accident. You can also do it just being a pedestrian.
What's the easiest way to do it outside of rolling in front of a truck coming 50 miles an hour?
Mr. Barlow may be closer to that problem than I am.
I believe I'm right in saying that about 1/3 of the traffic deaths were caused to pedestrians rather than to the drivers. I may not be correct in that.
How do they kill themselves, Mr. Barney?
Well, they can do it in a variety of ways. Crossing between intersections is an important way to do it. Crossing against a stop sign is another important way to do it. Walking along a country highway at night without any distinguishing color is a good way to do it. Going out between parked cars is a good way to do it. There are many other good or bad ways, if you please, to do it.
I, a minute ago, sort of gave a rap to California, so I better give it a pat, and a very fair pat. One of the things which they're doing out there is on the intersections, they have specially marked places for pedestrians to cross, and heaven save the automobile that doesn't start to come to a stop the minute that automobile does or does not see any pedestrian putting one small toe down on the highway itself. The police are really tough about that, and they've cut accidents way down. There's just one simple little thing that comes from a man who doesn't know anything about it, but there's one simple way they cut accidents. But we've been talking, I suppose, primarily about adults, because children, in theory, don't drive cars very much. Are children very safe on a highway? Mrs. Jacqua?
They're no more safe than the rest of us. Children, unfortunately, are prone to run out after a thrown ball or some other toy or even a pet dog in between parked cars. It's tragic, but it's true. Whether it is altogether from their carelessness or a lack of parental training might be a moot question.
But certainly the child can't be considered responsible all by himself there. That comes
not
back
entirely.
To the home?
It comes right back to the home, to the training which the parents give to their children in habits of safety. You know, we should all practice the safe way of doing things until it becomes a natural habit, and we do it just as naturally as we drink our coffee in the morning or
We've covered the ground specifically in one form and another. Let's draw this together a little bit and let's see what general things we can get out of it. As a listener, hearing what you people have been reporting so far, what you're saying more than anything else, I guess, is that it can happen to you, and it's very likely to, that we all tend to go on the assumption that accidents are something that happened to other people who are too stupid. And even if we got into the spot where we might have an accident, we would have sense enough to jump back on the curb or slow down the car or get away from the machine and get on the right side of it or put the bolt back in the tractor, as the case may be. So first of all, you're saying don't think you're likely to avoid an accident because statistically, you've got just as much chance as anybody else, and maybe somebody else causes the accident too. Having warned us that we're all fall guys for death by accident, then what do we do, Mr. Forney? Suppose you would, let's go around the table and each of you can give a little prescription for staying alive and in one piece.
Well, I think the fundamental thing is to use foresight in everything we do, to realize that the accident possibilities of every one of our acts, and to take care of those situations so that we do anticipate the possibilities and do it the safe way.
How do you use said foresight? You mean by looking at the situation wherever you are and saying, how am I most likely to get killed and maybe I might?
By planning the various things that can happen in a chain of circumstances and saying that if I do this properly, the next thing will take care of itself. If I don't do it properly, the next thing may turn out wrong. It won't always turn out wrong, but it will in a percentage of the cases. If we could all realize that, the accident toll would be certainly lowered.
How about you, Mr. Trainer?
Well, Mr. Cook, I would say that you must keep safety in mind at all times. You must assume that what you're going to do is not the right way to do it and prove to yourself that you are doing it the right way. And if you'll keep safety in mind continuously, regardless of where you are, the chance of an accident are very remote.
In other words, you consider everywhere you are as a possible death trap or accident trap, and you get suspicious of your surroundings and you look for trouble?
Regardless of what you do, there's always some hazard connected with it.
That isn't a very friendly way to approach home sweet home, Mrs. Jackman.
Well, I'm going to give three ways to the housewife by which she may remedy and possibly correct some of these hazards.
Incidentally,
Mr.
you
Trent
dare...
was talking about.
Before you do, Mrs. Jackman,
right.
You dare say housewife. That's more than I dare say. Every time I say housewife on the air, I get at least 20 letters saying very sharply, Mr. Cook, please realize that women are not married houses. They are not the wife, the wife of a house, the house of a wife. Call
You're
us homemaker.
Right.
You may call
You're
them a housewife.
You're quite right, but everyone who keeps house doesn't make a home either.
All right.
So I think there are critics on all sides, but be that as it may, this is directed to the woman in the home who is its safety engineer. First of all, she can consider the arrangement and avoid clutter in her homes. Keep an open passageway in all of her rooms so that that cozy look won't become an injured look. Then she can carefully take care of her equipment. Make sure that it is in first-class condition, always usable, her lamp cords are not frayed. And then the third thing is to realize that what she does, what she wears, and how she behaves is the contributing factor to safety.
All right, Mr. Kirk, what do you want to add?
Mr. Cook, if we could just bring every farmer to a full feeling of the responsibility that's his when he goes out to operate his machinery, and furthermore, all other operations on the farm, and realize they're in his hands, I think we could help this a lot.
And I think we've all discussed the various ways in which we could not get ourselves killed in traffic. So thank you all for being with me this afternoon to discuss safety and ways of protecting ourselves. This is Dwight Cook saying good afternoon from Chicago.
Listen in again next week at the same time for another cross-section of the USA. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.